Good evening and welcome to Paranormal Perceptions. I hope we're on the air. Unfortunately, between the internet and our telephone problems out in the boonies here, I'm not really sure tonight, but I will know here in just a few minutes. In the meantime, I have a most wonderful guest on. I heard him speaking on Coast to Coast one night, and the conversation got so interesting I thought everyone else would be interested as well. His name's Todd Murphy.
Yes.
And he has a website, www.shakitechnology.com, and I'll put that up after the show. Hi, Todd. How are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Actually, an easier website for your listeners to remember is spiritualbrain.com.
Spiritualbrain.com?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll put that one up on the website afterwards then.
All right.
And what I wanted to talk to you about was basically the ability a person can have to better themselves using their brain waves, and especially when it comes to psychic abilities, how they can learn how to control their brain waves.
Well, you don't actually learn to control your brain waves. There's no way that a person can tell introspectively whether their brain is producing this kind of signal or that kind of signal. What they can learn to do is to pay close attention to how they're feeling. And eventually you can learn which states of feeling go with which EEG states. EEG stands, of course, for electroencephalography, which is the name given to the gathering and interpretation of what are called brain waves. But there has been some success. I think it's actually quite significant success in getting people to have psychic perceptions through brain stimulation. And the device that's used for this, or the technology that's used for this, is called circumcerebral magnetic neural stimulation, which is kind of a big name to have on it.
And do they shorten it?
We can shorten it to two. One of them is Octopus, because it has eight channels. And that's the name given to the apparatus that was used in the original laboratory studies, which I'll be telling you about in a moment.
Oh, great.
And the other name is Shiva, which is the name given for the recently available commercial version of this technology. I developed it myself, working with the people who did the first version of the technology, and I don't ever like to be on the radio without mentioning their names. And they are the good Dr. Michael A. Persinger and the most excellent Dan Corin of Laurentian University Behavioral Neurosciences Program. You'll have to hold for a second while I cough. Sorry.
That happens. Oh, with our allergies we have here down in the South Texas area, every time you turn around, it's a sneeze or a cough.
Yes. Well, I'm in San Francisco where the weather changes every 15 minutes.
And it really does, too.
We're going on here, too. Yeah, the way this technology works is by applying a magnetic signal to your head.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears at one set of magnetic coils, and then it moves to the next set, and the next set, all through eight sets of them. It actually takes 16 coils in order to do the job. But by deriving the signal from an important brain function that appears on EEG,
mm-hmm.
we can actually just slightly perturb or disturb this brain function and actually make it possible for some of the cognitive faculties, for want of a better phrase, that are usually inhibited in most people to emerge.
Why are they inhibited?
Well, I think that's because this has to do with my own beliefs as a scientist in a couple of on a couple of questions of human sociology.
Yes.
But I believe that we're not supposed to have everybody psychic, or at least that's not our part of our evolutionary strategy, our survival strategy.
Well, we wouldn't want everybody to run a 3-minute mile either.
That's exactly right, and we don't want everyone to be pregnant at once, and we don't.
Oh God, no.
And we don't want everyone to be the fiercely belligerent warrior hunter who jumps out and announces that it's going to be no problem to take that 6-ton buffalo, which is the largest the people have ever seen.
Sounds like my husband.
Another part of the population has to be very much prone to fear and anxiety and start wondering what's going to happen if this six-ton buffalo gets the better of us. Are we going to lose our most skilled and fearsome warrior who is very useful when we're being attacked by other tribes, or when a tiger catches us unaware. He's the man. So some of us, faced with a 6-ton buffalo, will say, let's go get it. And the others will say, no, that's not what we're going to do. And they either figure out a way to take it without much risk, or they just simply let it go and move on to more reasonable sources of food. Similarly, we don't want everyone in our species to be psychic. The problem is that even for the most skilled psychic, it can be very difficult to distinguish what is genuine psychic perception and what is the result of wishful or fearful thinking.
Yes, that's very, very true.
So if we had everybody with a full-blown set of open and functioning psychic skills, they were telepathic, they were clairvoyant, they were precognizant, and all of this, it would be very difficult for our early tribes, our early social groups, to get any clear guidance from them. Rather, we want some people that are strictly this worldly, and if they can't touch it, they don't believe in it. And they're the ones that are going to make decisions based on what we would ordinarily call facts. And although we don't want to make all our decisions that way, we certainly want to make sure there's always one or two voices that will give us the benefit of a totally fact-based perspective. And then the tribe, the group, as a whole, in councils, as the decisions were always made in our early evolutionary history, and continue to be made to this day by some of our hunting and gathering brethren and sisterin, and those who practice what's, I believe, mistakenly called primitive horticulture. They made their decisions in groups. So one of them is the group of, one of the voices in that group is the voices of the warrior, family men, and indeed with this group, mostly men, who are very practical, very pragmatic and empirical, and won't believe in anything that isn't real. Then there's another group, or won't believe anything that they can't see as real. Then there's going to be another group who is very intuitive, very sensitive, and they're going to offer an entirely, or largely, psychic perspective on the problem. And the whole group listens to all of the voices, and then as a group makes the best decision.
What happens when they don't listen to the other voices?
What happens when they don't listen to, well, sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Is there any group of those voices that is more able to use this helmet and benefit by it than any of the other groups?
Oh, okay. Well, I was actually talking about why everyone isn't meant on one level or other to be psychic.
Okay, don't mind me then. Keep going.
Sure, but I can. That actually offers a great segue back into the original subject. It does seem that no matter what kind of device one is using from this family of technology, complex magnetic signal technology, some people are always more sensitive than others.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who are the most sensitive will usually have some, they'll know about it because they're much more sensitive to other spiritual techniques and other kinds of psychic information in the rest of their lives. But then an awful lot of people do explore this technology hoping for some kind of spiritual awakening, however quiet or however dramatic it might be. They simply want their perspectives to be opened up a little bit. And we do get a good number of reports of that as well. Now, in the original laboratory experiments using the octopus developed by Persinger and Koren,
mm-hmm.
Three of them actually stand out as being quite decisive in making the workings of this technology clear. One of them happened when they worked with the remote viewer Ingo Swann.
Yes.
He never confirms anything. But there is considerable rumor and, what could we call it, back-channel talk to the effect that he actually was one of the remote viewers that worked for the CIA or possibly the FBI for some time.
Right.
He was a government remote viewer. And to keep your job, you have to be reasonably accurate. Never mind the percentage of successive hits that could be written up in the scientific literature written with the skeptic in mind. They don't work with the skeptic in mind over at the CIA.
Oh, no.
They just plain want the results. So Ingo Swann's remote viewing was actually enhanced using this technology. And at one point, he had a vision while he was in an acoustic chamber receiving this stimulation of three skeletons. And he was able to quickly sketch out the location of the skeletons in his remote viewing, and they turned out to correspond with the locations of the bodies of three of the researchers in the room nearest him. In another case, pairs of intimates, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, lovers, excuse me. were paired off in the laboratory. And one of them would be in the chamber receiving the stimulation, and the other would be in another room. And what they were given, there's the target person, that's the one getting the stimulation, and the stimulus person, which is the one who's not getting the stimulation. I know it's odd, the stimulus person is the one not getting stimulation.
I think they isn't that a beacon now? Or no? A beacon would be, is the one that is giving the information.
Well, that's a vocabulary from another area.
Okay.
And I can't pretend to be familiar with it.
I can, whether I am or not.
Well, I must beg your indulgence as I ask that we work in the
okey-dokey.
In the language of this this one group in neuroscience. So, the stimulus person sat with postcards, and the response person sat with the magnetic stimulation going. And what happened was, you're going to have to excuse me for just a moment.
Surely. Probably most of the listening public, if they've been in any of the storms we've had lately, are doing exactly the same thing.
Okay, I knew exactly where the cough medicine was, and I hope that didn't take too long.
No.
The stimulus person was asked to think of the other person and look at the postcards and try and think of anything, any memory that the postcards would inspire that involved the other person. Meanwhile, the other person receiving the stimulation was asked to remain open and kind of remain aware that the other person was nearby.
What type of stimulation would they be receiving?
The magnetic stimulation.
Okay. And that is all?
Yes, that's all. Excuse me. And then they got a group of students, actually 40 of them in all, and asked them to read the text of the comments from the person looking at the postcard, the stimulus person, and the text of the comments from the people who were receiving the magnetic stimulation and were the response person for the thoughts that the postcards generated.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were able to do was line up the comments from the person receiving the magnetic stimulation with the comments of the people observing the postcards and thinking of whatever memories would come up. And they found that there was a significant overlap.
And they would not necessarily have just need to be in the next room. There could be any amount of distance, wouldn't there?
Well, that hasn't been studied, but in principle, yes. According to the mechanisms of operation, there should be no distance, should be no limit for anyone. Once they're tuned into the states of consciousness in which these things happen.
Right.
And that is the consensus among many spiritual teachers. Satya Sai Baba, the Indian saint, who maintains psychic connections, so the stories go, with hundreds, thousands of his disciples and well-wishers all over the world, repeatedly says it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Baba can find you. Baba can hear you. It doesn't make any difference. I've known a number of remote healers who are able to heal people at a distance. You speak to them on the phone, they get a grasp of your person through the sound of your voice and the way you use your words. You hear them. They hear you tell about your illness or your pain or whatever the problem is. And then they simply are able to broadcast by whatever means, and we'll look into that in a moment, something that counteracts the pain or the illness that you're struggling with, and so they can heal at a distance. I actually was a student to one of this sort of healers once. I learned healing by laying on hands, not remote healing.
Yes.
Now, the mechanism for this, and I'm going to ask you to hold while I cough again, Now, the mechanism for this appears to arise from the fact that the brain has considerable electrical activity going on at all times.
Right.
Our neurons and synapses and axons are all firing away with little electrical impulses. And they're different in different places in the brain and different times, and they differ according to our activities of the moment. So whenever there's an electrical activity in the brain, there's a corresponding magnetic activity.
Right.
You probably remember Maxwell's equations from high school, which the teacher showed you probably without your understanding. It says,
funny,
right?
I'm old. High school was a long time ago.
Okay. Well, actually, Maxwell's equations stem from the 1890s.
Not that old.
Okay. Well, let us hope so. And they basically describe how much magnetic field you get out of how much electrical activity.
Right.
Or vice versa. Now, the brain is densely scattered 5 million per gram with magnetite crystals. And these magnetite crystals are formed in the neural tissue themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they line up in a way that actually maximizes the amount of magnetic field that they can generate.
Right.
So the electrical activity in the brain initiates magnetic response from these crystals, which are, again, 5 million of them per gram. And this creates magnetic signals that our brains broadcast. And there's no way to stop a magnetic field, or a gravitational field for that matter. You simply can't shield from it. You can't put anything in its way that will slow it down. It's very, very difficult to have any effect on these signals whatsoever. Researchers who want to shield from the Earth's magnetic field have to dig subterranean chambers, which they line with all kinds of rare and expensive materials that even then don't really block it out. They just reduce it to the point where they can, where it's pushed into the background.
Mm-hmm.
So our brains are broadcasting these magnetic signals all the time. Now, because you can't attenuate, we can't reduce or slow a magnetic field, these are carried all over the Earth in the form, through the medium of, the Earth's magnetic field. The implication of this is that every brain is connected to every other brain on the planet through the Earth's magnetic field. Another way of looking at the same thing, we're getting a little more speculative here, is that we are all constantly immersed in the Earth's magnetic field, and that that field, the Earth itself, plays a role in everything that happens in our brains and in our minds. There's a lovely tradition from Southeast Asia. I believe you find it in Tibetan Buddhism as well. And it says that the night before the Buddha's enlightenment, when he met the demons of Mara and used his magical powers to fend them off, and the exact story depends on which scripture you're reading, the Earth appeared. The Earth Mother just literally arose out of the earth with wet hair, and she wrung out her hair and produced a flood that swept all of this away. And the legend that goes with this is that the earth itself is interested in the liberation of every single mind. Whenever anyone anywhere becomes enlightenment, has a moment of peak insight, when it reaches to some new level of growth, the earth itself participates in that process and smiles upon your individual victory.
And isn't that a wonderful thing?
Indeed it is. Now, the other thing that's worth telling about this technology, and I know, big jump from the Earth Mother with her holy hair to back to the lab, but that's what we're doing tonight. There's a signal, a very specific signal that the brain produces in the course of its normal operation. It's called the 40 hertz component, but it's also called the binding factor for consciousness. And the reason it's called that is because it's present when we're awake, it's present when we're in REM sleep, but it's not present in those moments of sleep where we're not aware of what's happening. It's not present in a coma. It's not present any time when it's impossible for us to have subjective experience and then remember it later on, which is one of the hallmarks of consciousness. Basically, without any memory, capacity for memory, it's quite impossible to be conscious in the sense that we know, without some actual memory created by the individual in the individual life, were just a set of reflexes.
Right.
You wouldn't know much more than to move away from areas of high saltiness and move towards areas of less saltiness, the way a flatworm does. So the capacity to have an experience and then remember it is crucial to the maintenance of normal consciousness, probably to the maintenance of extraordinary consciousness as well. So this 40 hertz component, and it's important that your listeners sort of close their eyes and try to visualize with me as much as they can. It runs from the front of the head, your forehead,
yes,
to the back of the head. It does not run forward again. It just runs front to back, and then front to back, and then front to back, and so forth. Now, what this means is that when we put these magnetic coils around the outside of the head,
right,
on the right side of the brain, and then we cycle it counterclockwise, on the right side of the brain, the signals are disturbing the 40 hertz component. It's disturbing the binding factor for consciousness.
Okay, that's making sense.
And on the left side, it's running in the same direction, so it does not break it up as much. Does that make sense?
Yes, it's acting the way that the impulses are appearing. It's acting more or less like a bridge of sorts.
Yes, or a damper might be another word.
Okay.
That dampens the activity of this one particular component on the right side only. Now, what happens is that normal right hemispheric functions are also dampened a little bit. Again, my apologies. This wasn't happening until I got on the radio with you tonight.
I do that to people.
Ah, well, no doubt you'll bring your healing intentions to full force on my ticklish throat and everything will go swimmingly from now on.
Well, if you are interested, I am a Reiki master. I do distance healing, and after the program, after you go to bed tonight, I'll be glad to do that.
Yeah, just my whole respiratory system could use a going over. My Chinese doctor can use any help he can get. And
oh,
my
you
Western
have Chinese
doctor doesn't
doctors
have a
too
worthwhile thing to say.
Well, that happens.
Yeah, apparently it's an allergy. But let's carry on.
Alrighty.
So the binding factor for consciousness is being disturbed on the, dampened on the right, but not on the left.
Uh-huh.
And that means that lots of normal right hemispheric functions and activities are also dampened along with it. And what this seems to allow is for right hemispheric activity that would ordinarily be inhibited is now free to operate.
Oh, that sounds grand.
And what this does is it allows a very unique right hemispheric function to emerge. And that is psychic skills, psychic perception in whatever modality. Of course, different people have different strong points. Uri Geller, who was supposed to be able to do telekinesis as powerfully as anyone, was actually not clairvoyant. And he could not do remote viewing. And he wasn't precognitive. He could bend metal with his mind. At least so the stories about him go. I never saw him work.
Well, I had not been able to bend metal, and yet I'm a medium, and I talk to spirits. I do healing. I do all kinds of things. But I don't do a lot of the, well, like PK or like Uri Geller. And I know so many people who have the abilities, but they're specialized. So would this then be able to change it so that you had a broader spectrum of abilities?
It's possible. In my experience, it would require use of this device on top of normal cognitive exercises, normal thought or feeling exercises that are intended to develop these skills naturally. So you would use the device to open up the potential and then the specific exercises to develop the capacity, the perception, the specific perception that you want. So if you read books that explain how to do remote viewing, they will tell you that you simply think of something at a distance and wait for your first impressions to appear. And those first impressions, whatever they are your information from that remote location. If you're trying to do telepathy and read other people's minds, you focus on the person. And if they're in your presence, you look at how they're feeling and how their body language. You drink them in, as it were, in a single glance. And then ask what's in their mind right now, and the first thing that appears to your mind will usually be it. So the techniques for developing remote viewing are different from the techniques for developing telepathy. So you have to pick your modality and then try to work with it. Now, as far as something like precognition, which involves knowing that events are going to occur before they do, that's very likely a frontal lobe. It's going to involve some activation of the frontal lobes. The frontal lobes are are instrumental in our ability to consider the future, to plan, to extrapolate, to anticipate, anything to do with the future. So if you're going to ask yourself what's going to happen in the future in an esoteric way,
yes,
you're very likely going to be initiating the same parts of some of the same parts of the brain that are involved when you try to anticipate the future rationally, as an economic forecaster does with his piles of statistics.
Right.
If you're trying to understand what other people are thinking and feeling, you're going to be activating the temporal lobes for that, because the temporal lobes are where emotionality appears from, in conjunction with some very deep structures. They're the ones that manage our states of consciousness, and by extension, the ones that help us to appreciate the states of consciousness of other people. One very deep temporal lobe structure, the amygdala, is instrumental in interpreting the meaning of other people's facial expressions. Now, to leave that structure out of it when we're trying to intuit a person's emotional state would be inefficient use of neural resources, and it's probably not going to happen. The brain, in spite of all of its amazing and breathtaking complexity, remains a very efficient machine, if we can reduce it to a machine.
Is there any way to forecast with this technology which portion of your abilities might begin to function better?
It would take time, but it can be done. In my own personal use of this technology through the Shiva device, which is available at spiritualbrain.com, and I'll tell everyone right now, it's not cheap, I found that I was able to anticipate things that I didn't really need to anticipate. If I was turning a corner and wondering if the city bus was going to be there, I would know it. Like, oh, the bus will be there. Bang, I turn the corner and there's the bus. I get out of my bed first thing in the morning to a ringing phone, and I already know whether I should pick up the phone or not. You know, maybe I want to...
You don't need call waiting.
Yeah,
ID.
Right, I just know that I should have my cup of tea first thing in the morning before I talk to this person. And then the other one is a guy who just wants to get a device and wants to talk to me for 2 minutes, and then I know just to pick it up. So when I don't really care, when I don't have a deep emotional stake in the outcome, then psychic perceptions about things that are immediately happening now come to me quite easily. As far as reading other people's minds and their thoughts are concerned, I would say my skills in that area have gone up, but for me, the idea of being able to look at a person or hear someone speak and to know their emotional state has always been a goal of mine. I don't want to be Mr. Sensitive, but I certainly don't want any other man to be more sensitive than I am. So, I'm just kidding there.
No, I really think this is a good idea now.
Yeah. So, I find that my psychic skills appear in very immediate areas. Occasionally, I will look at an object in my home, for example, and I'll have some psychic hit about it. And usually the psychic hit turns out to be correct. One thing that I knew was just not going to work out was actually stolen from my apartment. I left the person alone for a minute, and they were gone. They were a potential client. Someone was referring them to me, and I saw them, and, they disappeared. And later on, I learned that they had a drug problem.
Oh, my.
Well, I knew that the object was not going to be around. I already knew that, so it was okay.
Well, there's some things that just aren't meant to be ours, like that is supposed to be, I guess, moved on with someone else for whatever lesson that's needed.
Yeah, it seems strange that a digital camera that was missing its cord, and was never better than a second quality one anyway, should be it, but that's the information that comes. You can focus on the perceptions that come to you. You watch your own thoughts. You watch your own perception, and you see what appears spontaneously immediately after them. First comes the perception, then comes the thought. As the spark flies from the steel, the metaphor being you're trying to create a fire with a flint and steel, you hit the flint with the steel and you get a spark. As much time intervenes between your perception or your thought and the immediate response from within should be no more than the amount of time it takes between when you hit the flint with the steel and you see the spark. And the idea is there is no gap. It simply appears instantly. And the speed at which it appears and sometimes how briefly it appears makes it possible for people to simply never know that anything happened.
Oh my, how sad.
Well, that's okay, because if you are a mathematician, you want to get a sense that you can find a solution to your problem. But you need to do it longhand. You need to show your steps and make sure that everything is clear and correct along the way. So if you had a, if you were a mathematician and your intuitions on these subjects were too strong, it would help. It would actually hinder you from doing your job well. We exist in multiple spectrums, we human beings. And for you to miss out on that information might be sad. But for someone else, to be inhibited by that information would be just as sad.
That makes sense.
Yeah, there is no ability that is not a blessing to some people that is not also a curse to someone else. We have infinite variety in our species, and we've got room for every type of person there is. Oh,
thank
we have
God.
Room. I think nowadays we don't have as much room for aggressiveness as we used to. So perhaps we are going to have to find ways to teach the kids not to take pleasure in that. But it's okay. There are some people who will never be psychic, and it's just fine. Some of them fall so deeply in love you can't possibly imagine it. Others, never having a single psychic perception, never having a moment's deeper quiet and peace through meditation, can yet enter utterly rapturous and ecstatic states through prayer. Everybody's got an inroad into something worth attaining.
Now, I've never looked at it like that, and I have felt sometimes such pity for people who don't get some of the information the way I do, who don't have knowledge of things that I do,
mm-hmm.
and other people like me that I know happen to have, and yet you're right. What are we missing out on that they are getting?
Yes. When I was younger and first getting a serious interest in science, I used to know a fellow who did differential calculus practically in his sleep.
My goodness.
He was an astonishing mathematician, and he worked in cosmology, actually. And
what a wonderful thing.
Yes. Special relativity, Kaluza-Klein theory, where you try and explain the world using 7, 12, and 25 spatial dimensions. This got mentioned on Star Trek occasionally. And I remember once, after a long discussion that had to do with the Big Bang, I and a couple of friends of mine were sitting around with him, and we were telling him how awestruck we were at his grasp of all of these things. And I don't know what mood was on us, but we kept going for a while. And you were like, so brilliant, man. It's just unbelievable. How can you, like, be this, like, brilliant, man, without your head exploding, man? It's like, wow. And he put his pencil down, took the cigarette out of his mouth, put it in the ashtray, folded his hands on the table, leaned over and said, I never get laid. Don't laugh, because it was the torment of his life.
Oh.
So we thought he had a great life because he had these abilities. We found out, actually, and rather pointedly, that he didn't want to be praised for what he had achieved that was cheap to him. He wanted to be praised by women for that which was about that which was dear to him. There's
Is he room still alive?
I lost touch with him. I don't know.
I was going to say we'd try and fix him up here.
Yeah. Well.
You know what? We've got a caller that has been so patient from area 325. So, just a second, and we'll get him on the line.
Okay.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the line with Dee and with Todd.
Hello. I probably talked to you. I can't remember what show you were on, but I remember talking to you somewhere.
Okay.
My name is Andrew.
Yes?
I have a question for your guest. I'm a sensitive person, and normally I can detect where a person, like if it's older male or female, energy by its human energy. What would you call that?
If I understand, you're asking what I would call the ability to distinguish a male or a female person simply by their presence.
Yes, and knowing where what direction they're coming from.
I don't know. I have had some personal experience with that, but I don't know the name of it. If I were to reach into my bag of words, and there are so many words available to me, I would call it a directional sensitivity.
That sounds very good. I was going to use sensitive. Well, I want to thank you so much for calling. And
okay,
if you will,
you.
Listen to the rest of the show. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we're back.
Hello.
Yes.
So, let's see. To return, there are so many interesting distractions we can get on. But to return to the 40 hertz component.
Yes.
What it does is it inhibits the 40 hertz component on the right far more than it does on the left. And the 40 hertz component, the binding factor for consciousness, must also be taken as a kind of binding factor for our states of consciousness.
Yes.
It allows states of consciousness to appear in which we are more able to perceive the subtle information coming to us primarily from other people via the medium of the Earth's magnetic field. The individual's response, whether it works into something clairvoyant, clairaudient, precognitive, telepathic, and so forth, would depend on the individual's own neural history. So for some people with very active temporal lobes, telepathy would be far easier to achieve than precognizance. For someone with an already developed frontal lobe, precognizance might be easier to develop than telepathic skills.
And so would it also perhaps develop more than one skill?
They could, but it would probably require, for at least one of them, it might require taking on board some of the traditional exercises that go with these skills. The Shiva neural stimulation device that does this is not a push-button technology. I just went over my own experiences, and I found that it was a push-button technology. I didn't have to run myself through any kind of special training or do the cognitive thing and sit
uh-huh.
down with a candle in the lotus posture and work at this for 20 minutes a day the way some teachers recommend. What came up for me quite naturally were things that I needed to know about but that weren't terribly important and over which I had no strong emotional charge. So, for example, I am extraordinarily fond of women and would like to have a partner. So I meet women. I can't tell whether they would be interested or not any more now than I could then. And at best, it has always been a process with a certain amount of mystery attached.
I think it's that way with all men and
right. but
women
the
is, same way looking for men.
The point is, because I had an emotional investment,
uh-huh.
it became difficult to make it work. And this is something that psychic teachers recommend. That you try not to develop your psychic skills over issues where you have an emotional investment. Now, the reason for that involves going back to the binding factor once again. If you perturb the binding factor at just the right speed so that you're disturbing it as much as possible as it runs from the front to the back,
yes,
and going past any given spot 25 times a second, 25 times 40 equals 1,000, 1,000 milliseconds, so now run it back, and you get 40 hertz. 40 hertz because it happens 25 times a second, and 20 times 40 makes 1,000 milliseconds. Sorry
mm-hmm.
for the math, but when you perturb it, for really mathematical reasons that I won't go into here, what you get out of it is activity from the brain in the range of 6 to 8 hertz. And this encompasses what's called theta activity. And theta activity is what you can read from a brain when someone is meditating, when they're under hypnosis, when they're in a trance state, or when they're receiving this kind of stimulation, this circumcerebral Shiva stimulation or octopus stimulation. And I emphasize these words because some people may want to go to Google and see what they can find out about it.
Right. Would the electrical stimulation that you're using to achieve the theta level work hand in hand if you were also trying to meditate at the same time, or would you not be able to meditate because of the stimulation?
You wouldn't be able to meditate because of the stimulation during the stimulation. But about an hour to an hour and a half afterwards, as the after effects from the stimulation, the immediate after effects, really taper off, the areas of the brain which have been affected by it are still more sensitive than usual, but now they're not being directed by the stimulation, so they're available to be directed by the meditation practice.
Oh.
And when that happens, the meditation practice can actually gain in depth substantially.
So your ability to achieve the state that you're looking for, get any information that you're wanting to get, absorb whatever it is you want to, is going to be heightened by the fact that you previously had used the Shiva or the octopus.
Think of the baseball batter and his lead bat. He picks up the lead bat, he swings it around for a little while. The lead bat maybe weighs, 25, 35 pounds.
Holy
heavy.
Cow.
And then they pick up the wooden bat afterwards.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They swing. And that 3-pound baseball bat suddenly weighs nothing. It takes no effort whatsoever to control its speed and direction. And all of their attention is now available on hitting the ball. And you certainly wouldn't want them to hit the ball with the lead bat. And they wouldn't want to do it either. And that would be like trying to meditate or doing psychic work right during psychic training during the session. Now, if you are already psychic, as we found with these pairs of intimates and with the Ingo Swan, and now's a good time to tell you about another one of these experiments. And this one was much simpler. The sibling, these were just brothers and sister pairs all the way. One of them sat in the chamber and got the magnetic, not electrical, stimulation. While the other sat in another room, getting nothing more than EEG readings. They had the brainwave monitors on their scalp running to the machine.
Oh, this is really interesting.
And they sat there. Now, when the one who was getting the magnetic stimulation was asked to imagine that the other one was sitting right next to them and that they were reaching out and touching them, like, touching the upper arm to get their attention or something like that, the EEG of the other sibling in the other room showed a marked response.
Wow. Now, that's mind-boggling.
Yes, it is. It's not mind-boggling because of the transfer of information. I think most of your listeners are probably well accustomed to the idea and don't want to hear from skeptics who deny this possibility anymore. We've got pretty good piles of evidence that says that something real is going on. Now this line of research is actually letting us figure out what that is real is actually going on. So when a trained psychic or someone who has a natural sort of psychic connection to another person are working, then you get psychic transmissions happening during the session. But for most of the work, for training purposes, using the device first and then doing the training after and allowing you, encouraging yourself, it takes a little work. The brain stimulation device that can make you psychic without you bootstrapping yourself up to it at all has not yet been invented. And because of the tremendous role that intention plays in the role of the brain, whether it's attentional intention or esoteric intention, is enormous. And it may be that there will never be any stimulation device that will ever be able to overcome the integrity and independence of each mind, even as it exists in this magnetic, geomagnetic bath with all of the other minds. Where was I?
I don't know. Now you've got... I'm visualizing all these minds, and I'm wondering... If the theory of non-local mind is true, then wouldn't that make experiments such as you did and also the ability of people to bond with or to get information from a source at a distance easier with the Shiva device or the octopus?
In principle, yes. Except that however much bonded people may be by love, by genetics, by long association, their interest in working with this will still be at very different levels. You can have a woman who loves prayer and spends an hour a day doing it, married to a guy who doesn't believe in it at all. And they can actually be very much in love, and it doesn't have to be a problem unless someone makes it one.
Right.
And yet those kinds of interests, meditation, prayer, psychic work, the choices in reading, can actually have a lot to do with and say a lot about how much someone is actually prone to all of this. So you could have a husband that's very prone and a wife that isn't, in which case it might not go so smoothly. It's best with this technology, as with the traditional mind technologies of meditation, prayer, and yoga, to take your own mind and only your own mind on board as your own responsibility. And that means that whole mindset of responsibility for one's own consciousness would tend to discourage finding out about that casually. And there have been no laboratory work done to find out about that rigorously and carefully. So time will tell.
I just think it's such a fascinating subject. Like everything that I do and the people I know, the things they do, I want the answers as well.
Right. I think that we all do share something in common. It is possible for minds to communicate across distances. It's possible for minds to be connected in ways that make distances irrelevant. So to an extent, I guess I have to say I believe in the non-local theory of mind. But then on the other hand, if I were to drop a brick on my foot right now, you wouldn't feel the pain.
I'd hear you.
Right, but you wouldn't feel the toe suddenly going inflammatory. You wouldn't be the one that needed to jump up and say, ouch, and then quickly sit down because you don't jump up when you've just stubbed your toe. So there is a non-localization of mind, but there's also a very strong localization of mind. And while it may seem sad to some people that might separate us in ways that we could be united, I wouldn't want anything to interfere with my daughter's ability to have an independent and integrated mind that she can well and truly call her own and no one else's.
Oh, I have to agree with you there, and just think how your life would be narrowed if you were not allowed to make your own choices.
That's right. Just go to the doctor and that's it. All of a sudden, your whole life can be rearranged around doctor's orders. And that's a drag.
Not a good thing at all for any of us.
Yeah, why take on more of that? It would be nice if our minds were non-local enough that, let's say, 50 or 100 terrified Iraqis could overwhelm the intention of one American president for whom I did not vote. But unfortunately, the world seems not quite set up that way.
Do you know that my show has nothing to do with politics, and every time you turn around, politics is coming up and the same direction that you were just taking?
There is a theme in contemporary spirituality that unless we get our act together as far as politics and economics and the stewardship of the planet and the relationship between nations and the relationship between human beings, we will not develop spiritually. At the same time, as a belief that if we do not develop spiritually, then we will not survive as a planet because of political and economic concerns. It's not possible to draw a really clear, meaningful line between the two. And the notion of who I am and who my people are has expanded so much in the last, say, 20 years.
Oh, yes.
That if I speak of me and find that means referring to an Iraqi peasant, I'm only proud of that.
I really like you.
Well, thank you.
You have the right idea about our world and the souls that are in it. And back to the Shiva, the octopus devices, I just want to ask you a few practical questions.
Please.
Pardon me. I meditate. I do all kinds of exercises because that's who I am. But for the person who's out there and has had trouble with meditating, you feel that this would perhaps help them overcome any problems they're having so that they too could meditate?
Well, actually, the device that has a good track record for that is not the Shiva device, but the more popular and less expensive 8-coil Shakti. Shakti, by the way, is one of the names given to Uma or Parvati, who in Hindu mythology is the consort of Shiva.
Mm-hmm.
And the pattern there is similar to what I described before. If you pick your signal well, and that means you have to pick a signal that actually matches your spiritual practice. So if you're into prayer and spirit communication, self and other, you want to work with the social structure, the emotional structure,
right,
the amygdala. If you're into meditation, you want to work with the hippocampus. That's a cognitive structure. And on the right side of the brain, the one where that the Shiva device dampens a little bit, you get nonverbal information processing, nonverbal thinking, which can be tones or chords for a musician, colors, shades of color, shadow, and palettes of color for an artist. This nonverbal information processing can be enhanced. Now, for meditation, which is very much about suppressing the words or controlling the words, if you're not to the level of suppressing them altogether, so the meditator counts 1, 2 as they breathe, or they just allow the word breathing, the phrase breathing in and breathing out, and exclude everything else. The hippocampus contributes to that a lot. So if you were to work with the hippocampal signal over the right side of the brain, then you might find that an hour to an hour and a half after the session, it's very easy to activate the right side of the brain and along with it suppress the language centers on the left. So yes, you could get a meditation enhancement from it. And there have been many reports of this. Vipassana and Zen, which are similar, almost identical meditation techniques, mantra practice, transcendental meditation,
mm-hmm.
And even the use of other light and other mind machines, like the light and sound machines, the flashing lights, binaural beats, and so forth.
Well, I've used
all
those.
Of these
those
can
are fun.
Be enhanced by doing them an hour after the end of a Shiva or Shakti session. Shakti, there's many more reports, but that's because Shakti's been around longer.
Mm-hmm.
The Shiva device actually was issued in January of this year, so it's quite new. But as long as we have a few minutes left, I'm going to read you one of the reports from it.
Please.
And actually, this is the first report, and so far the only decisive one, although there's been no complaints from anyone. So I assume they're doing well, but it is expensive. They would complain if they weren't. But they're not sending me reports, as indeed there is no reason they should. There's no precedent. Even though I'm a scientist, even though this is neurotechnology, even though that is a strong tradition in the sciences for gathering reports, there's no precedent for demanding reports of people's spiritual experiences, whatever they are. Those have to be left private whenever the person chooses. So I don't get many reports. But here's one. And it begins, P.S. Had a very distinct vision, including a clear visual, from a sort of being or intelligence 2 days after my first Persinger session. And that's one of the sessions in the Shiva device that is named for the man who developed it, Dr. Michael Persinger. He says, I've been doing a lot of work attempting to contact specific entities, which are, parentheses, according to some occult lore, close parentheses, available to deal with when certain portions of the brain are stimulated or developed. Where that comes from, I don't know, but certainly it doesn't come from neurosciences. Anyway, I was not expecting anything like this to happen after just one session, especially not so dramatically, and I chalked it up to some sort of psychological whiplash effect caused by my many attempts to do this activating with little or no success in the past. The Persinger session was probably just a jump start that was needed to push the whole process over the edge and on the road to my desired ends. Now, I didn't read the whole thing because the fellow gets extremely wordy, but what he'd been doing was doing spiritual work, intending to contact spirit entities, spirit
right.
helpers, spirit familiars, and getting nowhere with it. He did the Persinger session, and 2 days afterwards, he finally had some success with it. Now, this is a very demanding thing to ask of your consciousness. This is life. We're in it. We live it. It goes on moment by moment, and to a large extent, we get what we get. To try and take your consciousness in hand and say, you will now contact spirit familiars, is very demanding. And overall, the brain, the parts of our consciousness that change when we develop spiritually, are not much given to taking demands well. You do the work that you do and you get what you get, whether it's with neurotechnology or meditation, or you've reclused yourself into a convent or a monastery. You work hard with yourself as much as you can see, and the rest of it you leave up to God, to your own inward Buddha nature, to make explicit or whatever. So for this guy to be able to have that powerful an experience, the very one he'd been demanding a couple of days after a session, I take to be a very, very significant result. The fact that it involves a spirit familiar, which implicates a different structure than the hippocampus, the one that we would expect to be behind results from the Shiva device, is equally significant, very significant, in fact. And it is the hippocampus that's most involved. The brain part that responds to that theta wave activity that comes up when the Shiva device is used is the hippocampus. And hippocampal functions like nonverbal information exchange, the perception of space, and the ability to create and retrieve memories are all very much hippocampal functions. And the last one is worth a word. I am a very big fan, if I can use the word, of space as a spiritual theme. Not only the cosmos, the infinite, you know, starry heavens under which we live, but our perception of space itself, sacred architecture. You enter a big space and it's shaped this way and something happens to your consciousness.
Right.
You enter another big space and it's the Astrodome and nothing happens to your consciousness. There's a kind of, wow, look at this place. But, you know, somehow it doesn't transform.
It's not on the sacred level.
Yes, whereas space itself, I think, should be. How shall a man be just with God, who maketh Arcturus, Orion, and all these starry firmaments? The Book of Job. Space itself is enormously beautiful, and I think Carl Sagan, when he did Cosmos, and he had those long sequences where you're just flying through space, watching quasars and pulsars and galactic clusters fly by, with that wonderful etheric music, he actually got very close to what I think is the most spiritual ethos that science is going to be able to offer in our lifetimes. And now with 2 minutes to go, I'll be quiet and let you say whatever you'd like.
Mainly, I know that the people who are listening are very interested in learning how to increase their abilities. And this, to me, seems like it could be a way to jumpstart and help you, especially if you're having trouble with meditation or with contacting whatever it is you're putting out there to contact.
Right, and without spending $650, there is one bit of help that I can offer. If they go to my website and click on the link for the Shiva device and look for an article about how to develop psychic skills with Shiva, they will find a number of suggestions there that I think are quite worthwhile even without Shiva. And because it is such an expensive device, and I think my position as developer of the device and must need to be a careful student of the literature about the research up to the present, I think they may find that it has value and that their time reading over it won't be wasted.
And as far as things go, it just depends upon what your personal priorities are, because there's a camera I want that costs probably as much as, if not more than, the Shiva device. So it depends upon exactly what it is you're looking to do with your time.
Yes, it is. But I know that there are many people who, not yet in control of their lives, feel that one cannot get there from here. And rather than tell them just to get there, I do make a point of telling people that this gives you psychic development information, you know, to the best of my ability, and I think that that is probably close to the best of what science can offer these days, and I like to steer them there as well. We have a spread, all types of personalities, all types of people in the human species, and some of us are able to throw off the obstacles that prevent us from enjoying prosperity. Others choose to engage other priorities and other challenges with the few years that you have in any one incarnation. And I think that they are as well worthy of respect as any of them. I know a woman who will probably never put together $650 for a Shiva device, but she was able to stop using drugs and get her baby back. and is now
a mother.
Oh,
how wonderful.
Now, how can we say that her priorities are higher than ours?
That is just wonderful.
So, good luck to everybody. That's what I say.
Exactly. We're all in this together, and we just need to find our own path.
Yes, and in closing, I'd like to say my website is spiritualbrain.com. There are email links, and if anyone wants to ask me any questions, they should go ahead and do that. I love questions, comments, criticisms, marriage proposals, whatever.
You're a mess. I already have the link up on the radio site.
Okay.
And you probably will be hearing from people after they download for their iPods.
Very good. And when can we all look forward to being able to get that MP3? Hello?
What now? I'm still here. I didn't understand.
Oh, when can we look forward to being able to actually retrieve that MP3 for our iPods?
It takes anywhere from an hour to the next morning. It depends upon what kind of traffic they're having and what kind of problems they may or may not be having with Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you are the very model of a modern, efficient operation.
What can I say? I've been on there probably longer than most of the people that are on there now, and I started out as a guest and then was asked to be a co-host and then was suddenly told the person was not interested anymore, so I'm still here.
Hey, baby.
If you can learn anything, I'm interested.
Right. Well, it looks like we're just about to the last minute, are we?
Yes.
Okay, would you like a joke?
Yes.
What's an agnostic?
Oh,
an
Lord.
An agnostic is someone who doesn't know if there's a God and doesn't think that you know either.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite jokes. I have no claim or monopoly on truth, neither does science, neither does the Dalai Lama. The scene's always wide open for everybody all the time.
Truth is what we're all looking for in our own ways.
Yes.
And hopefully, some of us are going to find it. I have enjoyed listening to you, talking to you for this past hour, and I really would like to do it again.
Well, I have other themes, so you're more than welcome to contact me.
I really want to do reincarnation with you.
Okay, well, your responsibility in putting up the MP3 files is one of my main motivations in doing this, and I hope we can do a number of them. Personally, I know there are lots of things we could cover, and most of it your listeners won't have heard before. I know that because of the enormous size of the rock that I've been living under for the last 10 years while I put all this together.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad you're out from under it now, because I've certainly enjoyed it. Well, you take care,
and
I'll be getting back in touch with you because we want to have you on again.
Okay, wonderful. I look forward to it.
Okay, take care, hon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.